Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I got a call around that time from an assistant asking to meet, and I had assumed that it was about this movie for some reason because of the timing. It was like a very frantic message for Greta, you know, oh my gosh, are you confirmed or not? And then I realized that the message was for Greta Gerwig.
Oh, no.
Something totally different. It could not be clearer that wasn't my job.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Awardist, where we are chatting with the actors, creators, and more who are contenders this year and breaking down the state of the 2024 Oscars race. I'm Entertainment Weekly executive editor Jared Hall. First of all, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Secondly, Joey Nolfi is off again this week, but joining me is EW editor-in-chief Patrick Gomez. Hey, Patrick, how are you on this fine fall day?
I'm good. Thanksgiving is traditionally my favorite holiday of the year, so it's a great time of year.
So I've been
feeling good about it all month.
Nice. Is that because you're like a big fan of turkey and gravy and mashed potatoes? Like, what's the root of your love of Thanksgiving?
I like Thanksgiving because I feel like a lot of other holidays are usually only friends or family. And I find, at least personally, that Thanksgiving is one that I find ways to celebrate with both, which is really cool. I also love Thanksgiving because, yes, I do love Thanksgiving. Like, if I was offered one last meal, it would either be breakfast of some sort but probably most likely like a Thanksgiving. Anytime I'm at a restaurant and there's a Thanksgiving dinner on the menu, like, that's what I'm getting.
Oh, that's good to know. All right. Yeah, I mean, just give me all of like the side dishes, honestly. The sides and the pumpkin pie, apple pie, pecan pie. I'm here for all of it.
You lose me at pecan pie, but before
we know
that.
How I am. Oh, that's true. Yeah. You shouldn't eat that with that little allergy. But
allergies aside, exactly. I've just never, even growing up before I had it, pecan pie, which is huge in Texas where I'm from, not
yeah.
jam. But
what if it was a chocolate pecan pie?
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. There was just something about pecans in general that I'm just not a
You're also
of.
Not like a big chocolate lover either, are you?
Yeah, that's true. So I love brownies, though.
Oh, man.
So.
I tried. Oh, all right. Well, I tried to turn you on to the pecan pie. It didn't work.
So welcome to our food podcast.
yeah, exactly. Exactly. The Awardist eats. Also, well, with this holiday weekend upon us, plans to catch up on any like movies or TV shows?
Yes, so much. I've been traveling for the past like week and a half, and the amount of things that I've collected on, and I will say I've not cut the cords on my DVR, are very strong. And I've been receiving a ton of screeners in the mail of things that I can't wait to dive into. But thankfully have like been able to like work ahead a little bit. So I haven't missed too much, but definitely a lot to check off the list. And I also am married to someone that insists on seeing things in a movie theater if they are even going to be in there for one weekend. There's a lot, not just to watch at home, but also to go to the theaters. He's like, we've got to block off like basically all of Sunday. And I'm like, okay.
easy, done. Yeah, I have a couple friends who surprised me actually with their desire to see Saltburn. So I'm actually, I think, now going to see it for the fourth time. This time I will be paying for it. The previous times have been all part of, press screenings and stuff. And yeah, same. So many various screenings to catch up on. I'm now getting screeners, by the way, for movies that are opening in 2024, which is a yes. little like hard to wrap my head around right now, but it's fine. We'll do it because, By the way, 2024 is only like 5 weeks away. I can't believe I just
it's
said
crazy.
That. But
yes, I'm also squeezing in Saltburn before a Friendsgiving on Saturday. So,
ooh, yes, I cannot wait to hear what you think. By the way, another movie that I highly encourage folks to check out is this upcoming week, because you hopefully have some downtime, is the movie Past Lives, which opened in June. It star Greta Lee is our guest today. So be sure to stick around for that conversation. People might know her from, many things, but among them, perhaps best known for Russian Doll or The Morning Show, which, by the way, she was had some phenomenal stuff on season 3 of The Morning Show that just wrapped recently. But with Past Lives, she is like firmly in leading lady status, which is something that she told me she was not actually sure was in the cards for her career because she is an Asian woman. And when we were having that conversation, I really, like, I was hearing what she was saying, and then I just got, my brain, I felt, like, stuck right there when she was saying that, and I kind of, like, stopped listening to her for a few seconds after that because I was just comprehending kind of the gravity of what she was saying, that she never felt like a movie like Past Lives was in the cards for her, which is sadly not as shocking of a sentiment as
you would hope it would be,
you know.
Yeah. You know, there's so much. I even think of my own being Latino, like, I think growing up, like, there was no, especially being gay and Latino, there was no one that I could look to that was at least openly gay. Now there's a bunch of examples that I'm like, oh yeah, duh. So unfortunately, that's I'm not surprised at all. The great thing though is that there is a world in which we get two Asian best actress winners in a row like that, and so that's a fantastic way to look at it.
Yeah.
Is like, yes, that may have not been the case growing up, but we may, there's a possibility that that is what happens, and that is exciting to think about. Just the fact that we could jump from that in her childhood to this being a possible reality now, you know, we could sustain, if that will be sustained, we'll see. That's always the struggle when there's moments of major representation, is that they often are followed by long periods of time of people saying, well, you know, they had that one. So we'll see. But, you know, it is interesting because... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't
always
think anyone
a wild argument
means
to
it
hear.
Facetiously, but it just ends up being that, like,
that sort of
sentiment can come out, and that's tough. But it's one of the things that makes talking about award shows like the Oscars in particular, I think more so than most other award shows, all of that comes into play because people have been paying such close attention to it over the years. And I think that there's because it's often the last one in the award season, I think there's been a lot of opportunity to comment on where other shows have gone right or wrong, or what the trend is, and will the Oscars continue it? It opens itself up because of the timing to a lot more conversation about Oscar So White, or like, is if a certain project is getting a lot of headwind or really have rallying behind it. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out for Greta, but I'm wishing the best for her.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and she's so fantastic in this film, which is just, I recently, for a story I wrote, I believe called it Heartbreaking and Life Affirming All at the Same Time. Her performance, which is, kind of spread out over her character, we see over the course of basically 24 years when she's a child, and then 12 years later as a college student, and then another 12 years later when she's married, and looking back on a very close friendship, and kind of wondering, you know, those kind of what ifs, and, you know, if I had gone different directions with my life, you know, how or if I'd made different decisions, how my life would be different. And ultimately, well, I don't want to say what she ends up deciding for herself, but it's just a really beautiful and poignant story that I think even if you're not an immigrant like her character in the story, there are people from our lives that we've perhaps lost touch with and wonder, like, I wonder where they are now. I wish I had kept in touch with certain people. So there's something to relate to in all of those regards. And so I could not recommend this film more. She, by the way, I so hope that she is one of those five best actress nominees at the Oscars. But Patrick, we got to talk for a second about how loaded that category is this year, because there's about a dozen women who are really in serious contention for those five slots, along with Greta. And this is in no particular order: Emma Stone for Poor Things, Margot Robbie for Barbie, Sandra Ulla for Anatomy of a Fall, Natalie Portman in May, December, Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, Kaylee Spaney in Priscilla, Carey Mulligan in Maestro, Anjanou Ellis-Taylor in Origin, Annette Bening for Naiad, and Fantasia Barrino in The Color Purple. I mean, I don't even... So let me ask you this. Would you ever be in support of the Academy adopting a floating nomination system like the Emmys, where the number of nominees is determined by the number of submissions? Like, if there are 100 submissions, there are five nominees, 100 to 150, there would be seven, and so on.
Yeah, I think yes. And I say that with that tentativeness in my voice, because obviously I know that there's been a lot of back and forth about Best Picture and is it five or is it 10. I think if they went in something more Emmys, where it was more flexible and based on percentages of votes gotten or percentages of number of submissions, I think that would be a much better way to do it than just saying, we're just deciding it's this number or it's this number, because it can be very arbitrary. And also, some years, there's many more female, thankfully, I think over the years, there's many more female roles that we start to talk about in contention than male roles. And sometimes it's vice versa. And I think it'll be awkward the years that it's lopsided, but I think it's good to have the option open to honor more performances if it is worthy. Because sometimes it's like, well, there's 10 best actresses that deserve a nomination, and there's really only like four best actors that are in contention.
Right.
That being said,
do better, guys. No, I'm kidding.
Even as I say that out loud, it is always nice to see who that fifth person is when we're like, okay, well, there's four people we know will be nominated, and then there's fifth that, like, whoever that is probably not going to win. But it's nice for them to get a moment. I think that's when you get some of the surprise nominees that, like, it bolsters their career in a really great way. So, you know, it's not to say that a little bit of padding isn't nice and makes things exciting. But at the same time, I don't want to pad too much.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I mean, you know, you bring up the Best Picture category, which did the floating system for a while, and then it was either this past year or 2 years ago, it switched to 10 for sure Best Picture nominees. I mean, I'm just kind of thinking that there are actually more performances that could be submitted than movies, right? Because there are obviously many actors within a movie. So now I'm almost thinking, like, maybe that should be the reverse. Picture, let's go back to five, but the acting categories could be bigger, anywhere from maybe like 5 to 10. Just because there are so many more performances than there are actual films.
I would fully support that. Let's start a petition.
Just a thought. Okay, good. All right. Let's do it. By the way, one of those women I mentioned, Fantasia Barrino, she got a huge boost this past week thanks to a big press and industry screening where the entire cast of The Color Purple plus producer Oprah Winfrey did a Q&A after. You might have seen that stuff all over social media. That screening went quite well. And if you judge by those social media reviews, The Color Purple is a true contender now to potentially win Best Picture. People saying it is the best movie musical they have seen in perhaps some 15 years. The fact that the original Color Purple didn't win any, like, this should be, you know, the way to kind of right the wrong of that. And not just for the sake of righting a wrong, but because it's also deserving. And you know, that this movie will have a strong showing in acting categories. Patrick, you and I, we saw this movie months ago. So we were not at the one this past week, but now is, I think, our chance to share our thoughts on this new version of The Color Purple. So I will let you start.
Yeah, I have to say I was a little worried because I know, spoiler alert, Jared and I both liked it. We're horrible podcast co-hosts because we often have the same opinion. But I will say that I spoke to a film connoisseur whose opinion I do trust and really respect. And he had attended a screening, not as early as we did. Full disclosure, we saw a very early cut of this movie. And so we have not seen the final cut. So there could have been changes made. And it's not as though I thought that there was no notes to be given. There's little things that I actually am hoping that they tweaked, just very small things, as simple as like, oh man, I wish that one shot had lasted 2 seconds longer and that the next shot had been 2 seconds less, sort of editing sort of stuff. But again, very early cut. I know someone else that saw one maybe a month after us, and their screening had a very large audience. Ours was a very small group of people. And they felt that the reaction coming out of it actually wasn't that positive. So I've been so glad, one, to just know we were right, and that most people that are seeing it are enjoying it. I wouldn't say right, I'm glad that people agree that it is a good movie, or at least that they're enjoying it. And I was worried that maybe, we just got wrapped up in our experience and that wouldn't be one that other people would have. I think the performances are incredible. I think Fantasia will definitely get nominated. Where the fear is not the right word, but I think you could nominate basically anyone that has more than 10 lines in this movie. They're all just so good. And so I think where you could get into a lot of debate is who among the cast are going to actually get elevated to a nomination, because I could list at least four people in the supporting categories that deserve nominations, and I doubt that all four of them will get them, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. I mean, it is a really rousing film, which is why I think these screenings now with a lot of people in them are that's the way to go, to see it with a crowd full of people. So yes, I agree with you, Fantasia. Let's talk about those supporting categories, because to me, it's Danielle Brooks's Oscar to lose at this point. I think Taraji P. Henson also stands a great shot at a nomination. And then Coleman Domingo it's a great performance. You don't love the character at all, but it is a great performance. And he's very likely to be a double nominee for The Color Purple and lead for Rustin. So I think I would go with those four acting nominations. But like you said, there are some others that could squeak in. I mean, Corey Hawkins is also great, and a really kind of unexpected performance from him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he continues, every time he does something new and different, I'm just like, you are so incredibly versatile as an actor. He boggles my mind what he's able to do. And look, like, I knew he could sing and dance from In the Heights, but this was just at a whole other level of like the acting on top of all of that. I will say it's really interesting that you think it's Danielle Brooks's to lose, because I think it's Davine Joy Randolph's from The Holdovers to lose. And I think partially because I will admit that I went into that movie not expecting to like it. And I think in large part to her performance, I loved it. I will say also that I've seen it more recently, so there may be some recency bias here, but everyone will have the opposite if they saw it as it's released in theaters, that Danielle will have the recency bias. But she blew me away. I've always thought she's very talented, but she blew me away. She's my lead contender for the win there in support.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Well, and it's interesting because those are two such so vastly different characters as well, and performances, because Davine is so internalized and quiet, and you just kind of feel all of the grief and sorrow and guilt that she's feeling, while Danielle, just, it's a powerhouse scene stealing performance.
I'll circle back to your argument that Danielle also has those very quiet, you know,
that's true too. That's true.
Reserved moments because the movie covers so much time, so many years. You get a little bit of both from Danielle, which is not a spoiler for any of you that have read the book or seen the original film. But her character goes through a lot, and yeah. But that, I mean, you know, it's a little early to tell, but that category is also very packed.
Indeed. And there are more kind of, you know, honors and awards being announced by some of the various upcoming film festivals. Lauren Huff and I discussed some of those last week in terms of Killers of the Flower Moon, Barbie, Robert Downey Jr., Ryan Gosling. But of the ones that have been announced in this past week, let's see here. At Palm Springs, we have Cillian Murphy and Emma Stone. They are receiving the Desert Palm Achievement Actor and Actress Awards. Daveine Joy Randolph is getting the Breakthrough Performance Award. At Santa Barbara, Daveine, along with Lily Gladstone, Greta Lee, and Charles Melton, are all receiving the Virtuoso Award. There will be more of those announced. And also at Santa Barbara, Mark Ruffalo is getting the American Riviera Award. So we're starting to hear, of course, some of the same names popping up over and over, which could be quite telling for the way the rest of the season goes. But those are all very deserving performances. And folks who are members of voting bodies, I'm SAG, Patrick, you're Critics' Choice, right? I think everyone has a really tough job ahead of them over the next couple weeks and months. And lastly, well, almost lastly here, we're going to take a break here coming up pretty soon, but I want to mention the Golden Globes have a new home. After decades on NBC, the 2024 ceremony will air on CBS and Paramount Plus. Are you surprised by that?
I mean, it's just, it's always like a weird feeling that something like that you've grown up with for decades changes. And it's always just been so closely tied. And I think also, you know, doing what you and I do, Jared, when it's not just been dealing with the Golden Globes and the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, or previously the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, over the years. So many changes going on over there. It wasn't only dealing with them. It was dealing with every year. It was like the Globes meant dealing with the same NBC publicists that we've dealt with for years. Like, that's where it's more weird to me. It's less weird to me, like, turning the TV on and it being on CBS versus NBC. It's more weird for me just on our end of things, the back end logistics side of it. It'll be also interesting because,
yeah,
I think we're going to get a lot of little changes, but as a whole, I assume it's going to feel kind of like the same show. So that'll also be weird. It'll be like 9-1-1 moving from Fox to ABC. It'll be bizarro that it's the same, but different. Mm-hmm. Though we'll see. Mm-hmm. They might shake
Things up.
Because
it's still Dick Clark Productions. So yeah. Yeah, that's true. CBS network execs might have some thoughts and notes on what they want to see. And now the last thing before we take a break. It is now, Patrick, your time to advocate for someone or a movie that you think should be getting more attention this award season. Who or what do you think ought to get a nod?
Oh, okay. So I'm going to disagree with our beloved colleague, Maureen Lee Lenker, who reviewed The Killer for us. And she did not necessarily love it. I loved this movie. And it's everything that normally, like on paper, I wouldn't, other than the fact that it's Fincher. And like, I love Mindhunter on Netflix, his series on Netflix. Go watch that. It has all the Fincher things that I would love. But on otherwise, it was like things that I wasn't necessarily, like, quote unquote, excited to go into. But I think Michael Fassbender is incredible in this movie. He has to do so much voiceover and so much silent acting, because oftentimes he's either solitary or in a situation where he needs to be very quiet. Perhaps that's a reference to the name of the movie. And I just thought it was so well done. Every two-hander scene he has is just a masterclass in acting. He has Tilda Swinton in one scene. There's an incredible action scene that he has between him and another person that just goes on forever and ever and ever. Physically
and largely in the dark.
Yes.
A large part of that scene.
I will say in the dark, but in a way that you see everything still. So like, it's not like the dark was a way to like fake things out. Like you see it and it is him the entire time. If you are basing seeing that movie or not based on an EW review, I always hate when Maureen and I disagree, but I would wholeheartedly disagree with her. I think this movie is worth your time and perhaps worth a vote or two.
Yeah, he's great in this. I will say I wanted more Tilda Swinton. I appreciate what she was there for.
That's always the case.
But I know. That's a great point, too. Yeah, I mean, I just want her in everything. All right, so we are now officially going to take a quick break. But when we come back, Past Lives star Greta Lee, the awardist, will be right back.
It's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to The Awardist. Greta Lee's performance in Past Lives is one of my absolute favorites this year for reasons that I stated a little earlier, but she just delivers one of those kind of quietly demanding performances. She just demands your attention because you want to know everything that this character is thinking. And Greta Lee is a very efficient actor in those regards. She gives you everything that you want, but then she also holds some things back. She's very good about revealing things when she wants and needs to. It's a really beautiful performance. And we talk about the entire thing. By the way, a role I was shocked to hear that she originally didn't get. So let's get into that right now. My interview with Past Lives star Greta Lee.
Well, first of all, Greta Lee, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Awardist podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you for multiple reasons. But this movie, your performance, it's just so beautiful. I've seen it a couple times now, and it kind of gets me the same way every time. And I also like discovered new layers of it. And so that's, that's one of those beauties of rewatching something that you enjoyed, because you can pick up new things each time. But I gotta say,
how many times have you seen it?
So it was technically two and a half, because I started my second viewing of it, and then the screeners that we get sent, it timed out before I could finish it, so they had to renew it. So I watched it two and a half times. I will watch the back half again a third time. But yeah, it's just, I love it so much. It's funny, as I was prepping for this interview, I was struggling with figuring out, like, where do I start with you? But I finally figured it out, because I really want to know, like, was this, and it's really kind of starting in the beginning, did you audition for this? Were you approached for it? Because I'm really curious if you, like, had to fight off anyone to play Nora Moon.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I mean, it wasn't supposed to be mine.
Oh.
No, not at all. I can tell you that I first got the script just sort of in an email with the subject line from my agents, "Can you speak Korean?" and
what was the answer?
And the answer is yeah, but it wasn't at that time anything I was considering in terms of acting. Mm-hmm. I love acting, and it's hard enough to do in English. I wasn't really considering doing it in another language, like Korean. And it was just one of those things. And I opened up the script, and I, with no context, I didn't know who Celine was. We both grew up and had our starts doing theater, but we never crossed paths. And I read this script in one sitting and was completely destroyed by this script. It felt like out of nowhere. I think in reading it, it initially reminded me so much of the movies that first got me excited about acting in the first place. And a kind of like a movie that I was afraid wasn't going to be made anymore, mm-hmm. that kind of movie, mm-hmm. And not one involving someone like me. You know, movies like Richard Linklater's movies or Wong Kar-wai.
Yeah.
But as I read, I think maybe similar to certain audience members, I had certain expectations about how it would unfold, and became clear it's a love story and a love triangle, but what does that mean? And by the end, I was just like totally bowled over by this person who had managed to write this ridiculously gorgeous script. And I thought, oh man, someone's going to be really lucky to be able to do this. And, you know, good for them. Good for them.
Without a thought in your mind, you really thought there was no way I will get this.
Yeah, no way. I think for someone like me, you get used to this idea that there are such limited opportunities. There just are. I mean, and sometimes when there's a role like this, that is just so undeniably, the depth of it, getting to play in a much more naturalistic style is something I'd always wanted to do in a space that I'd always wanted to be a part of, but I just didn't. It's kind of sad, but I almost sort of started to accept that just wasn't something that I was, that kind of career, that I wouldn't get to have that. So this came along and I auditioned for it and I didn't get it.
I did
not, because initially, and there's an additional funny twist to this. I got a call around that time from an assistant asking to meet, and it was really urgent. And I had assumed that it was about this movie for some reason because of the timing. And it was this voicemail that was left for me that was asking me to meet at Cafe Clooney in the West Village. Mm-hmm. It was like a very frantic message for Greta, you know, oh my gosh, are you confirmed or not? And then I realized that the message was for Greta Gerwig.
Oh no.
Something totally different. But that's what I'm saying. Like, it could not be clearer. That was like some sign. It was like a sign from the universe. It was like getting punched by the universe in terms of, could not be clearer that wasn't my job. Like, it felt so hilarious and absurd that could happen. But this is all to say that, like, yeah, me getting the job has this element of Inyan to it, which is apt for the movie. Mm-hmm. Because a year later, I got this call that was basically like, they're recasting. They just have a different idea for the movie. And are you free essentially now to meet with the director?
Wow.
I said, well, you know, fool me once. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can do that. But we met and we read through some scenes. We read through the Skype scene, mm-hmm. the breakup scene between Nora and Hizung. And we also read one of the bedroom scenes with Arthur.
Yeah.
And she was reading with me. It was just the two of us. And then we had this conversation about, I got to hear from her what her vision for the movie was. And we just talked. And at the end of it, she offered me the job. I don't know. It is still, I have all these pictures of me, these selfies that I took, just because I needed some sort of like tangible like evidence that that happened. I sent it to my agent, like, I think she just offered me the job. But can you go find out if that's for real?
Yeah, let's get that confirmation for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Inyan. We're definitely going to talk about that in a second. What you've been saying perfectly segues into another question I had here about, like, wondering how much of a believer you are in, you know, timing is everything and things happen when they're supposed to, because you've been acting for 17 years or so. Like, is this a role that you would have or could have tackled 10 years ago?
No. Hmm. No. I do believe in timing. I really feel, I mean, this that playing Nora, it really was at the making of this movie and getting to play her, like, I can't really adequately express just like it is such an unspeakable honor. And just one of the most special experiences professionally of my life. I mean, truly. Mm-hmm. It was definitely something that was done on the wings of all of the other ladies that have gotten to play in the past.
Yeah.
Years of doing comedy and doing improv comedy taught me so many things about pacing, timing, stamina, how to manage physicality and doing stage work, doing theater, you know, slumming away on the stage, you know, sometimes for no one. All of those things really added up to this moment. It does, I can't help but feel like it is cosmic. Like it does feel like Inyon. Like I feel like I have Inyon with the script. Definitely have Inyon with Celine and with Teo and Vaughn collectively. And it's just wild. Like the way the three of us are so different and we have had such completely different professional journeys and lives leading up to the two years ago when we were filming. And then for the three of us to come together under the supreme leadership of Celine.
Her first film, by the way. Worth noting.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
Totally ridiculous. I'm deeply suspicious. I'm openly. I check her for zippers all the time. Like if we could unzip her body and like, I don't know if somebody else comes out. I don't know who. But somebody comes out. Yeah. I mean, I only know my own journey too. So I guess like it's funny now at this point to hear from people like, oh my God, like you really struggled and like, man, like you, like, what's it like? Like, and for me, I just feel as actors, like you're never entitled to anything, you know, it is tough. It's tough out there. You have to really want it.
Yeah.
And that's not to say being a woman and being a woman of color, being an Asian American actor, there's certainly challenges and limitations, limited opportunities because of the world that we live in. That's absolutely true. But I have really tried to, you know, make the best of it. And yeah.
Well, you certainly have with this role. I will say that much. An interesting thing about Inyon, I did a quick search, a Google search. There was a spike in search traffic for this term in January, which I suspect would have been around Sundance Film Festival. And then again in June into July, which is when the movie opened, and then the weeks after. And that to me is really kind of like one of those fascinating effects to see, like, it's one of those little bits that people took away and were like, wait, what is this? I need to know more about it. Is this something that's like been part of my life and I didn't even know it? Like, I don't know. I thought that was an interesting little thing.
Oh, that's so cool. I had no idea. Yeah. I mean, even for me, I think growing up, that was something that I'd heard a bunch, but it wasn't something that meant anything personal to me. It was like something like my relatives would talk about. For me, even it wasn't until the movie that I developed like a much more personal and intimate relationship with what Inyon is. And now like I literally can't unsee Inyon.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Yeah, it's relentless. Actually, I could use Inyon break.
You know? she figured out one in the movie. You can perhaps figure out one in real life. Yeah. So, you know, here's something I found really fascinating. Here's that, you know, Nora is this, she's very driven and she is dedicated to her art and dedicated to, you know, making a name for herself. But of course, curiosity and love and companionship are very strong magnetic forces. And what I think so many people who've seen the movie have found so interesting is that Nora makes a positively selfish decision 12 years prior and says, this can't happen right now. I've got to focus on me, which is something you rarely see characters make that kind of decision, because in a lot of movies, that could have like stopped the story cold in its tracks. But of course, there's so much more to it here. Was that at any point for you? You're like, wait, how are we going to progress from here?
Because I think from the beginning, that's what was really exciting to me about doing this. This idea that, you know, that it's not even really about a woman who's defined by who she loves,
right,
or who loves her back. It's more about her love of her own life. It's sort of like the greatest romance in this movie is not the one that she has with Hesung, nor is it with Arthur. It's the one that she has with her own life. Mm. And that, to me, it just felt like, just thinking about it, just makes my skin tingle. But I can really appreciate what that means as a modern woman, but just as modern people. Mm-hmm. I mean, our lives have never been more expansive. It is possible to have a relationship with someone across continents. We can do that. Mm-hmm. We have the technology and the facility to do that. And yet we're still human beings living our lives. Mm-hmm. So I could appreciate that the movie, it almost starts at that moment.
Yeah.
You know, when she says no, goodbye, I think that for me is the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, I've wondered this every time watching it, that she actually had good intentions to reconnect sooner than later?
That's a good question. I think in her mind, she probably was open to the possibility of it. But that to me is more a matter of youth. Like, what's it like to be a young person? And when your whole life is ahead of you, it, like, those kinds of, promises, maybe, like, they hold differently in within you. 'Cause you are, that does not seem like such a heavy load at that time. You know, because there's so much that's possible. It's like, sure, yeah. Yeah, let's pick up where we left off in the year. Yeah, see you then. But we as adults know the inherent kind of that touch of tragedy in that, because we know how, if you've lived a life, you know actually what's likely.
Yeah.
With time passing, with different people coming in your life, and mm-hmm. different jobs you end up taking, and different cities you end up moving to. There's so many different, I mean, it's like an algorithm.
Yeah.
So it's that innocence of like, yeah, I'll see you later.
Mm-hmm. Which, and of course, to something you kind of touched on there, life had other plans for Nora, because here she meets Arthur, played so wonderfully by John McGarrow. And you know, we see their, you know, the beginning of their relationship, but then we jump ahead a bit. They're married. They've experienced life, many years of life together. And then Hesung comes back into the picture. So here's what I'm wondering. Did Celine keep the two of you apart until that day in the park when he first comes to New York? Or did you get to meet and have rehearsals or anything like that?
So she had asked that I keep the two guys separate from each other.
Ah.
So, yeah. So actually, the moment when they meet in the film, that's actually the moment. That's actually when they're meeting in real life.
In the apartment, I guess, would be when they meet the first time. Yeah.
That actual take, and she ended up using the actual take.
Wow.
That is when John and Teo, the actors, were actually meeting for the first time.
Hmm.
I love that. I love that that's what's in the movie, because our preparation for this involved my creating a completely distinct and separate world mm-hmm. with each of them. I mean, I had to do that free of the other one. And we would do all sorts of things. Like, Celine would ask me to talk about each of the guys to the other guy, so that the only thing that they would know about each other was through me. Like, I would be the conduit.
It's kind of like I've heard so much about you, when that's really true. They've heard so much about each other, but never experienced each other.
And it was, you know, slightly sadistic on Celine's end, but I can't pretend that I didn't also like somewhat enjoy myself, because mm-hmm. I would go over. I was asked to do this, in my defense, mm-hmm. but I would through some days of rehearsal with Teo, and John would ask, you know, how's it going? And I'd say, you know, wow, Teo, you, what an incredible performer, like what instincts, like my God. And then the same thing for John, and John would ask, like, okay, yeah, okay. So he's really handsome, but like, you know, yeah, wait, but was he funnier than me? and Teo asking about John, likewise, you know, just like, how good of an actor is he? And it just, I mean, it was great. And then that day ended with us, you know, going back to the trailers after they finally met.
Yeah.
And you know, we had some beers and made it official. But yeah.
That's really cool.
The other piece of this was Teo and I, we weren't allowed to make any physical contact up until the scene where we're reunited in New York.
Mm-hmm. The hug.
The hug.
Yeah. And that's weren't able to because of COVID restrictions.
No, because Celine was interested in this idea of just not letting us touch.
Oh,
you know, it sounds almost more explicit than what it really is, but just not, no, and no kind of like handshake or like pats on the back, just nothing physical up until that day. And we looked at all kinds of things to get ready for that day. In terms of physicality, it's really about the physicality of falling in love.
Well, and knowing that, though, thinking about the I'm going to use the word force, the force of Nora's hug. There's such a tight embrace and it said so much. But now knowing that there are so many more layers to that, it kind of honestly, I just got teary eyed a bit because it. Oh, wow. Yeah.
I mean, we watched the Marina Abramović, The Artist Is Present, video, the performance art piece where she, you know, she's like sitting at a table and she invites various people to sit across from her one by one. And then really unexpectedly, her ex-lover, love, shows up. And we watched that. And what that experience is, we watched Korean dating shows. Like misconnection dating shows. And it's so fascinating because we have this idea in our heads that the act of falling in love is like this beautiful, gorgeous thing, but it's actually incredibly humiliating.
Mm.
It's such an exposing, it's possibly the most vulnerable experience your body can undergo physiologically. And so we would watch these, I remember I was watching this Korean dating show where childhood sweethearts were reconnected, much like the movie. Mm-hmm. And the woman in a 10-second track, I would pause and if you followed each of the freeze frames, it was 10 different emotions. I mean, the initial, the shock, horror, grief, elation, ecstasy. And like embarrassment, it is so fascinating. So anyways, we had that in the back of our minds that day. And, you know, hopefully it amounted to a pretty nice hug, I guess.
It did. It did. Indeed. One of the truly kind of delicious scenes here is when the three of you are at the bar drinking and talking until very early in the morning. There's so many layers there of emotions between the two of you as you kind of play out, as you kind of discuss various what ifs, I suppose, is the right way of putting that. You know, a different time, a different place, how, you know, what would things have been like? And all the while, Arthur is right there and he knows every word that's being said. It's Were all of those words on the page? Did you guys have a chance to just kind of let the scene take you where it took you?
Those were Celine's words. She is incredibly decisive about the words, and I understand why.
Yeah.
They're beautiful, poetic words. That scene was shot over 2 days. The whole process really was, it felt like a play. But then those 2 days, especially at Holiday Cocktail Lounge, if anyone knows of it in the East Village, I mean, that really started to feel like we had been transported through some sort of like hologram into like a different time and space. Yeah. And we actually started to feel a little bit, it started to feel like science fiction after so many hours in that space doing that scene.
That it's so important and it plays so well. I've got to know, nearly the final shot, but the big scene when Hae-sung leaves, was it in the script, like how far Nora would walk, or was that kind of just like circumstance of where cameras were able to set up and everything? Because I find that long walk is just so, I don't know if agonizing is the right word, but emotionally agonizing as you're watching, like, how is she going to react? What is about to happen?
Yeah. I wish I had the script in front of me, because the way that it was written, it was incredibly, she was decisive in terms of the amount of time all of those things would take. I don't want to butcher this, but the way she described the amount of time, for instance, it would take for them to stand with each other when the Uber arrives. In the script, it said that it should feel both like an eternity and also like a blink of an eye.
Yeah.
It should have that sense of like, this is torture. It is going on forever. And then also before you know it, it's over. Which is like sort of an essence of life. Like it's like this, that's the quality of living that we are after. And shooting that, you know, we didn't know, Teo and I didn't know when the Uber was actually coming. And the way that last scene was shot was a single tracking shot. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were shooting on a 35mm, which is just such a cool experience. And also a lot of pressure for this movie. I mean, we really did not have a lot of takes, mm-hmm. and that sense of urgency when you have, you know, when you're thinking like, okay, this reel is 11 minutes, here we go. But we shot it in one tracking shot from the brownstone with Nora saying goodbye to Hae-sung, to Arthur, and walking with Hae-sung and saying goodbye to Hae-sung, with the Uber arriving, and then Nora walking alone and starting to cry and reuniting with her husband. And we did that. Yeah, it was a tracking shot. And I just, that was one of the hardest days. Mm. The process of doing it, I will never forget. And it will go down in the books for me, one of the most, I mean, truly special things I've gotten to do. But, you know, practically speaking, it's the East Village in the middle of the night. I mean, we like crowd control, and we really did feel like bungee jumping. Like we knew, you know, where what marks were supposed to hit roughly. We were given roughly an idea of like, then you walk together and you stand right there. And maybe at some point you turn towards each other. And then a car is going to come and that's it. That's it. And having to land, you know, certain emotional beats, mm-hmm. and also not know exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I remember the first time, John, amazing John, the first time, because that's not really something you can rehearse. You can't really rehearse that emotional, that where she lands emotionally at the end. And I remember the first time he saw it was during the take, and the look on his face, I was almost worried that, you know, I had all these thoughts like, oh my gosh, is this the wrong impulse? Like, are we off base here? Because because of the look on his face. Mm. And I thought, oh, is this too much? Like, did we miss the target somehow? And I just, you know, and then luckily, no, he's so incredible. We had so much trust and I think he said no, that because I feel like Arthur, I'm very struck by what I'm receiving right now. And Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it obviously translated to the screen so beautifully. And, you know, there's, you know, also playing into the fact that there's been this conversation about how often Nora does or doesn't cry. And then here she is yeah. in this moment, you know, she says she hasn't cried in a very long time. And now mm-hmm. It's just, I'm going to get emotional again thinking about it, but it's just so beautiful. And you know, the thing that's also really special about this story is that while, yes, it is very much rooted in an immigrant story and culture and how distance plays, you know, a specific role in their friendship, a lot of viewers can relate to this in some way. Have you been on the receiving end of, you know, social media messages or whatever it might be from audience members relaying their own stories?
I'm not on social media, but I can tell you in person, IRL, the kinds of experiences I've had, people coming up to me and saying that they've just seen a movie, all kinds of people. Mm. I mean, young people, old people. I've heard about a lot of long walks in couples after seeing the movie. Couples who have been married for a long time, sort of reflecting and reassessing different things about their lives. People who are dating, people, I mean, there are all sorts of experiences, and that's what I love so much. People can get something so different out of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, because there are also the people who come up to me and say, you know, you inspired me to break up with my boyfriend and find my child. You know, and I guess I'm here for it all, you know. Good luck to everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. That is one reaction I did not expect, but if that's the takeaway, hey, that's a great takeaway as well. It's eye opening in a lot of ways, and it's just beautiful is a word I kind of can't stop using, but it's just a movie that I hope everyone sees, because it's really special. And I think what you do is just phenomenal. I know there's kind of an ongoing thing about Nora, you know, what award she wants to win. And I hope you win all of the awards for this, because you're just fantastic.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
So much.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being here on The Awardist. And I hope and think we will see you over the next couple months.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, if I didn't already love Greta Lee, she has like shot to the top of my list of favorite people to talk to. She's just so cool and just really giving in terms of, you know, interviews like this and really talking about her experience. I was shocked, by the way, that she what she revealed there about the guys, the first time that the characters meet each other is also the first time that the actors T.O.U. and John Magaro met each other, which is, it's so fascinating how it's shot, because you see John in the foreground and them walk in a door behind, and he just kind of sits there like, all right, I guess I will go meet this guy now. And that's kind of how he was feeling in real life as well. I just think it was such a smart choice by Celine Song, who it's her first feature, and I think and hope the first of many fantastic ones.
Yeah, it's no surprise to me that although this is Celine Song's first feature, that she has an extensive theater background, because I find yes. that a lot of that is obviously when you're doing a stage production, by the time you're seeing it, the actors have not only met, but gone through the exact same motions dozens, if not hundreds of times. But you always try to find a way to have that moment exist at least one time while you're doing it. And I think that was fantastic that she did that for her. And I'm also just, you know, prior to this, Greta Lee, while she's done a ton, was always sweet birthday baby girl to me, because that is the line that she would say time and time again in Russian Doll, like over and over and over again. And it's just really exciting to see her get to continue to show new sides of herself and not just on screen, but as you pointed out, like I think a lot of people are going to be introduced to her as a person off screen for the first time during this award season. And I think that that's a fantastic thing, because she's someone people should know a lot more about.
Could not agree more. Folks, if you have not seen the movie yet, Past Lives is available to rent or buy on digital platforms. If you're a member of a voting body or a guild member, I'm sure you're going to be getting those screeners, you know, to stream at home or whatnot. So be on the lookout for those.
It came in my mailbox like 2 days ago.
There you go. Exactly. Well, I hope you will be watching that one this weekend as well. With all of that, we covered a lot this week, Patrick, but that is it for this episode of The Awardist. Thanks for being here.
Always and forever.
Oh, well, thank you. And thanks so much to all of you for listening. If you like what you're hearing here on The Awardist, follow, rate the podcast, and leave us an award-winning review on Apple Podcasts. And to keep the conversation with us going, you can follow Entertainment Weekly on all socials. We are at EW on X, formerly known as Twitter, and at Entertainment Weekly everywhere else. You can also tag me at Jared Hall. We will see you back here next week and every day at EW.com. Hope all of you have a safe and happy Thanksgiving weekend. Patrick, enjoy all that food. This episode of The Awardist is hosted and produced by Jared Hall and produced and edited by Sammy Junio. Full episode transcripts are available at EW.com. Thanks for listening.